Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mehler here. Our first guest is the author of a new book, and it's designed to help you become mentally fit to deal with what life throws at you. With us today, Darcy Loma, she is a master certified coach, a facilitator, motivational speaker, founder and CEO of Darcy Loma Coaching and Consulting in Madison and Monona. Her new book is called Thoughtfully Fit, Your Training Plan for Life and Business Success. And it's a great book. I really enjoyed reading it. And as I talk with her, I hope you'll join in. Do you need help getting through a rough spot in your life? What would you like to know about preparing for those events? You can reach us at 1-800-642-1234. It's 800-642-1234. Or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Darcy Loma, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you so much, Larry. It's great to be with you.
Well, I tell you what, I really was... I learned a lot from the book about myself, what I do, think I do well, and where I need some improvement. But the backstory kind of to the book was so compelling; it really adds so much to it. And we'll get to that. And you've been very active. In physically and I think mentally as well here, but training is an important part of your life. Why is that so important?
Yeah, first of all, that's the best compliment ever to say that you learned a little bit about yourself from reading my book. That's exactly what I was hoping for in writing it. And indeed, I have been an athlete my whole life. The last 24 years, I've been doing triathlons. And at some point, I realized that there's a lot of parallels between training your body to be physically fit and training your mind to be thoughtfully fit. And indeed, if you want to be effective, whether it is in an event or a race or in a relationship or at work, you need to practice and train for it and you'll get better results.
And over time, this your thoughtfully fit concept, I think it was kind of developed over a long period of time, did it not?
It sure did. I mean, it was sparked initially. I worked for 12 years running Senator Herb Kohl's office, and I noticed in that role that when constituents would come in, when lobbyists or protesters would come in, and they would have a message and they would be advocating for something, when they didn't handle themselves thoughtfully, they didn't get the same level of traction and results. I also noticed it in my own life, right? When I would overreact or react impulsively and not handling myself thoughtfully, I also then didn't get the best results.
Yeah, it's. I think we've all been there. Well, talk about this. Talk about your life before that March day in 2016. Tell us more about the.
Yeah. So I spent a couple of decades working in politics, not only for Senator Kohl, but I worked for the governor for a couple presidential campaigns. And when the senator announced he was retiring and was not going to be seeking reelection, that's when I hired my own life coach to help me navigate the next chapter of my life. And she asked me a question, Larry, that just forever changed the trajectory of where I was going. She said, "Darcy, if in 10 years you looked back and had no regrets, what would you do?" And that question just lit me up, because I was assuming, and my colleagues and my family, that I would stay in politics and, you know, go work for another senator or something. And that was the impetus I needed to launch my business full time. So January 2nd, 2013 was the last day with the senator. And January 3rd, I launched Darcy Loma Coaching and Consulting. And I have not looked back.
Well, and you've done a lot of training along with the experiences that you've had. You're a master coach, which there aren't too many people around that have that designation.
That's right. It was incredibly hard. There's over a 90% failure rate to be able to become an MCC, a master certified coach. And I worked hard at that. And it really has served me very well, not only professionally with my clients, but I'm a better mom. Mm-hmm. I'm a better friend than I was before I was trained.
Well, tell us, talk about what happened after you found, what happened and how you found out about it.
Yeah. So I launched my business and was a couple of years in. And when I launched, my husband was a full-time stay-at-home dad. And I said, the majority of small businesses fail in the first 2 years. So we designed that I would be really working hard and he would handle everything on the home front with the groceries and the laundry and the, kids. So it was March 17th of 2016, I got a phone call from my neighbor asking me, what's going on at your house? And I said, well, I don't know. I'm not home. Why? And she said, Darcy, there's 40 or 50 police cars and a SWAT team and officers and guns surrounding your house. And they just took John out handcuffed. He was barefoot and he wouldn't look at us. And I said, what? My husband, what are you talking about? And that started, Larry, the biggest nightmare of my entire life. My husband, it was the day before our 10-year wedding anniversary, the week before we were going on a spring break trip with an RV. He was arrested for sexual assault of a minor he had met online. And when he was taken away that day, he never came home. And I had to all of a sudden navigate and figure out how to be a single mom, how to run my business, how to get a divorce, all of these things that I was totally blindsided and never in a minute thought I would have to be doing.
Yeah, you described that very well. And I'm thinking, how in the world would anybody get through this? And you've relied on your own concepts here. Thoughtfully fit.
That's right. In a twist of irony, I had spent more than 5 years researching the obstacles that get in the way of being high performing. I had tens of thousands of hours coaching and working with teams and organizations. And we noticed there are really similar hurdles that everybody experiences. And so 5 days before my husband's arrest, all of those thousands of hours of research officially came alive and we launched Thoughtfully Fit into the marketplace. Little did I know that when he was arrested, I would need to hire my own attorney. The charges were very severe. He was ultimately sentenced to 10 years in prison. And my attorney said, Darcy, don't talk to anyone about anything. This is severe. And so I became ground zero to test drive Thoughtfully Fit in my own life. I don't recommend it as the best go-to-market strategy, but I was grateful I had it to help me.
Well, talk about then Thoughtfully Fit itself. There are, in your book, you have three different parts to the book. Engage your core. You talk about internal practices and external practices.
Yes. And so the model is really a metaphor for being physically fit. So there's three hurdles internally where we get in our own way. And then there are three hurdles externally where we have challenges with other people. And so those are the sections of the book that talk about how do you navigate those hurdles that, you inevitably come up in life, right? Because we can't prevent the hurdles. We can't eliminate them, whether it's an annoying neighbor or a challenging boss or a global pandemic, whatever it might be. But we can navigate how we respond to those challenges and that uncertainty and change that life throws our way. And so the model is built around those six hurdles. And then at the core are three simple steps. So regardless of what happens, if you can engage your core, you can handle yourself more thoughtfully in any situation. Just like if you want to be physically fit, if you have a strong core, you will be less likely to get injured and you'll be able to do any movement easier. But you can't develop a strong core by doing, sit-ups once a month, as much as we might like to. So the core in the Thoughtfully Fit model is three simple steps. Step one is to pause. Step two is to think, and step three is to act.
Yeah, and that pausing part. That's where I have made many mistakes in my life, because I haven't paused to think before I acted, as in, would you do this or could you do that or what board, you know, can you serve on this board or, you know, or be involved in this committee? And without thinking, many times I would say, oh, yeah.
Right. Of course. I had a client say to me, oh, Darcy, I realized I do it backwards. He said, I act and then, oh, I think, why did I say that? And then I have to pause and figure out how to fix it.
Well, you know, as I was, I watched 60 Minutes last week, and there was a feature on Chris Downey. I don't know if you saw it or not, but he was an architect, successful, and then suddenly became blind. And he wanted to still be an architect. And so I think he went through some of the points about the best ways that you raised about the best ways to think about it as it was unfolding. And I had already read, I was thinking, oh, that's kind of what Darcy was talking about. Think, what choices do I have? He was told, no, you can't be an architect anymore. You've got to learn something else. But he, you know, what's in my control, I think, is the second one. What would a successful outcome look like? Here I am spouting back what you told
me. Beautiful. That was such a fabulous recap of the essence, focusing on, you know, when something happens, there's some uncertainty, there is, you know, conflict, there's change that happens. That first step is to just pause, right? Prevent yourself from reacting impulsively or overreacting in the moment. And then think and ask yourself, what do I control? What are my choices? What different perspectives could I try on? What would a successful outcome look like? And then act. And you have to act, right? It doesn't help to just silently stew, because then you build up and you get resentful. And that's why you have to do all three steps in order, and then wash, rinse, repeat.
Not in the reverse order, like so many of us, so many of us do. Well, right. And as you say in the book, you can't control what happened, but you can control what happens next. I like that.
Yeah. And that's a beautiful example. Chris, you know, he's an architect. You need to be able to see to be an architect. And yet it sounds like he was able to, instead of having that shut him down, I'm guessing, Larry, based on the story you're sharing, that he was able to work through that and figure out how to move forward.
Become a very successful architect, started out on buildings that were specifically for the blind, and he found a bunch of technical ways to be able to see things with his fingers and with his mind, and has become very successful, not only in buildings for the blind, but for famous art museums and other places as well. But he took your method. I don't know if he read your book or not. he sure followed your what you were talking about. And you also mentioned, you know, okay, you have to also think about what are the obstacles. That's what he did. He found ways to be able to design without having seeing things. He uses his ears a lot, and in terms of surfaces, I don't want to get into that. What are the obstacles, and how can I address those challenges? And that's what you did.
That's exactly right, Larry. And it's not only for, I mean, we're given some extreme examples. My husband was arrested. That's an extreme example. He's an architect that goes blind. This also can work in your day-to-day life when you get an email and somebody's criticizing you. And not only did they email you, they copied your entire team. Instead of just pounding out a reply, or worse, reply all, in that moment, you can pause. And you can think, huh, okay, what's triggering me right now? What options do I have? What outcome would this look like if I felt good about it tomorrow morning when I wake up? And maybe instead of just pounding out that email, you pick up the phone and say, hey, I just got your email. And it sounded like you were a little bit frustrated and I felt, you know, a little defensive. Could we talk?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, but often that's this whole business about pausing is so important. And this internal practice you talk about, and here we're stillness, you talk about understanding stillness as a way to help you deal with issues. I get up every morning about 5:45 and I do my little 2-3 miles along Lake Monona and through the neighborhood, and I didn't I always felt so good after. I always feel so good after I finish, but I think a lot of that is it just kind of clears your mind and gives you. You know, sometimes you come up with good ideas. Sometimes you come up with ways to deal with issues. Just while you're looking at the lake, or while you're looking at somebody's really nice flower bed.
Yeah, I love that example, because when you access stillness as a practice in the Thoughtfully Fit model, it doesn't mean you have to be physically still. One of the ways that I find stillness is cutting vegetables. And so it's all about quieting the mind. And, you know, just like if you are an athlete, you are not going to, you know, lift weights 2 days in a row. Your muscles rebuild and need time to rest, and they rebuild when you're on that with those recovery days, and you're not going to get peak performance by skipping the rest. In the same way, your mind needs stillness to be able to access those different perspectives, to process, to try on other options so that you can respond more thoughtfully.
And you need to do that, I think, as you talk about, there's not just one way to do that.
Absolutely. There's lots of different ways, whether it's your morning walk or going for a bike ride or doing yoga or cutting vegetables. There's all sorts of ways. The key is to resist the urge to fill the stillness with more inputs, right? So we are a society, I mean, you know, putting on that podcast and the book on tape and making a phone call, and you're in line at the grocery store and scrolling on your phone. Just allowing your mind to rest and to find those moments of stillness throughout the day.
Yeah, very, very important. And I want to get to the external part too, the dealing with conflict and how you can focus. Most of the time, as you point out, you may not be able to, or probably not going to be able to change a person. You're not going to change that person or their mind if their mind's made up.
If I could write a book on that, I'd make a million.
Yeah.
So, right. You can't change other people. Yeah.
So what then do you focus? You focus on what you can change then.
Right. Right. And depending on what the situation is, it may be that you lean into flexibility, which is being able to stretch to accept someone for just as they are, who they are, instead of wasting your time and energy trying to change them or being angry that they aren't the way you think they should be. Or it may be leaning into balance, which is about creating a balanced relationship and trying to find out, like, okay, what is it that you want and need? And what do I want and need? And trying to find the win-win. Instead of being aggressive and saying, I'm going to get my way, I win, you lose. Or on the other end of the spectrum saying, oh, it's not a big deal. I'll just let it go. I won't say anything. I lose, you win. Either of those not sustainable for creating long-term, successful, positive relationships.
I was thinking about I was asked once to serve. I've been asked many times, but once to serve on this board. And it was in a phone call, and I said, you know, I could you send me the responsibilities of the board? And I saw the person email me those, and I looked at them, and I thought I could do pretty good here, but I'm the main thing here I don't think I'm good for. So I emailed them back and said, you know what, I like your organization, and it's a nonprofit, so I'm going to send you a donation, but I'm not really not fit, the proper fit for this. But I did give an, I gave an, a name of another person that they might contact about it, who I thought was better than I would have been.
What a beautiful example. And so for those listeners who have a hard time saying no, I mean, that's phenomenal that you were able to pause to think, to ask some questions, and then to act thoughtfully and say no. For those of us who have a hard time saying no, you just demonstrated, I've got three strategies. You can say not me, not yet, or not this, right? So not me might be like, I can't serve on the board, but I have somebody who I would like to introduce you to who I think would be good. It might be not yet. I'm a single mom. My daughters are in school. In 5 years when they graduate, I'd love to. Or it might be not this, you know, I can't serve on the board, but I love the mission and I'd love to write a check and give a donation.
So by the way, how's the book going?
Oh, it's incredible. I mean, launching a book in COVID in the time of a pandemic was really challenging because there's no book tours and in-person events, but we got really creative and we've been doing a lot of Zoom events and book clubs and podcasts and now of course the world is opening back up and we're starting to do more keynotes and events, which feels really, really exciting. And the paperback just came out as well.
And I think the, the book, and we've just been talking about it from a business perspective more than from a personal social perspective, but there is so, I think there's an awful lot there. What do you think of, give us your opinion on how this book people can use in their daily lives.
I wrote the book intentionally that it could be used in your daily life, whether it is a small annoyance and a frustration or a really big obstacle. And for me, it was so powerful. I just heard Gloria Steinem say something, this isn't a direct quote, but she said the ultimate form of healing is when you can use your pain to help others. And for me, the first version of this book, Larry, was for me. The version that I published was for others. And I'm hoping that when people read it, they can be inspired to take away a nugget and an actionable idea in whatever way is valuable for the challenges and obstacles they're experiencing in their life.
Well, here I got so involved with talking with you about this wonderful book that I did not give even the phone number, only at the beginning. So here we are at the end of our time together, and we didn't give people a chance to join in. Perhaps we could do this again because
I would love it.
There's so much more in the book, and you mentioned social media as well. And have you got a site that you can that people could go to?
Yeah, and people can go to DarcyLoma.com and call me and email if they didn't get a question on air that they wanted answered. Or ThoughtfullyFit.com also is tells about the book, and it has a quiz. If you're wondering which of the biggest hurdles is your most challenging, it's a 2-3 minute quiz you can take, and it'll spit out your hurdle as well as some strategies to be able to start training to clear that hurdle.
And I want to spell your name out because Darcy, not I, and Loma is Luoma for people they want to type that into their search engine. Darcy, a big pleasure. Thank you so much for taking time. The book, Thoughtfully Fit, Your Training Plan for Life and Business Success. You're going to enjoy reading it. It's a great read for a number of reasons, and you'll learn something from it. Thanks, Darcy.
Thank you so much, Larry. What an honor to be with you.
Appreciate it very much. Darcy Loma, our guest. Coming up, and you know, the show's a little different today because the congressional panel investigating the January 6th assault on the nation's capital has another hearing today, and it starts at noon here on WPR. So we'll have live coverage today starting at noon for those public hearings, both on Wisconsin Public Radio and WPR.org. So we'll have that. And in the meantime, let's talk to Jim Lattice about what we can see in the night sky. I'm Larry Mueller.